This week on Biotypical, we dive into the light and the dark of being in a relationship with every single biotype. You want the good, you gotta take the bad, and we're gonna tell you exactly what that is. And then for our patron-only section, we are going to lead people through an exercise to finally answer the question of what biotype should I be with? You're gonna get that answer, all that and more, after this.
That was great.
All right.
So don't go away.
Have you ever wondered why it is that we do what we do and who we do it with? Then this is a podcast for you. An exploration of human beings through systemic psychology and Unani biotypes. With Rodrigo Garcia Plates, Ross Everett, and Brian McElhaney. This is Biotypical.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, everybody. Rodrigo, the number one question that people ask us around biotypes is, what biotype should I be in relationship with?
If we had a dime.
Yeah, right? We should charge a dime. and I always wind up asking them, well, what can you tolerate?
Yeah.
You know, and what do they need to tolerate in you? So more on that later as we get in, because I think we can dive into this each biotype one at a time. You know, what is the upside and downside of dating each biotype?
Oh God. It's this concept that we've talked about in the past that always fascinates me, that human beings just don't seem to be able to see benefit or positive things without some sort of negative pushback. And for years and years in my life, I kept thinking, where does this come from? Like, why is it that if you have a superpower, there's going to be a drawback, there's going to be something else that's going to start suffering in your life because you have this superpower? And it didn't really make any sense until I realized that that's exactly how humans work. Because every time you meet someone that has something extremely attractive or powerful for you, people just want to keep the shiny side of every quality in human beings, but most of them come with a little bit of a dark side.
Absolutely. Like, if you want someone that's really good at making decisions, they're also going to be very opinionated about certain things that you maybe don't want them to be opinionated about.
They're going to be really good about making their own decisions and yours too.
You did an Instagram live where this is one of my favorites, and it's actually up on our YouTube channel. Like, I isolated it. I put it up on the YouTube channel. You were talking to a firewater. And by the way, for those of you that are unfamiliar with the biotype terms, there's a link down in our show notes description where you can listen to the intro episode where we outline all of the terms of biotypes and systemic psychology that we utilize very heavily, and especially so in this episode. So you were working with this firewater who was divorced 3 times, and you said, I can tell you why. Or no, you said, do you want me to tell you why you got divorced? And she said, do you want to tell me? And you went, yeah. And then you dove in to tell her that everything was fine when they were dating this power player, this person that was like this incredible leader that had all these opinions until they had an opinion about her.
Yep.
And she started crying, which is, you know, if you know a firewater, which is impressive. And kudos to her for allowing herself to go there. But
yes,
that was something, I remembered that so clearly, because there are so many people out there that say, well, I want to be a part of a power couple. I want to do world domination. I want to be a leader, and I want them to be a leader, and then we'll both be leaders, and then everything's going to be fine. And I just have always had this thought about, I think it's physics, but it might just be Doctor Who. But it's like no two objects can occupy the same space and time. And I believe that to be true in relationships as well. Meaning, you cannot have two people who are hell-bent on being the leader in the relationship. Otherwise, you will get conflict. And one of you in that position will have to relent. Otherwise, you're not operating as a soul entity, as a relationship. You're operating as two individuals. And two individuals could be leaders in their own life, absolutely. But when it comes to operating within a relationship, one of them needs to know how to follow or relent or relinquish power or whatever it is, because otherwise they're two hard-headed people that are unwilling to give up their positioning.
It's a typical problem that false fires have. Because false fires have, and let's be really kind to false fires when it comes to this in this episode, because I do feel like that sometimes I like beat them up too much. But something that's very particular about false fires is that it's the only open situation in which you see someone who's in touch with their power and their emotions. Like they're always present. Both of them are there all the time. And that contradiction becomes extremely obvious when they're choosing someone to be with. Because on one side, they love their personality being challenged. And they love someone that seems like more powerful than them and that can guide them and that can be a mentor figure in many ways. And they value that in a beautiful way. But then once the relationship is real, they want their emotional side, their tender side to be addressed too and to be cared for too. And if you chose someone because they were really good at challenging you, the power position that you built with your personality, this is not a nurturer. Mm-hmm. Like you did not choose someone that knows how to hug you at night. You chose someone because they fight you in like the conference room and in front of everyone else, and they have an opinion and they really care about their opinion as much as you do about yours. But this is not a nurturer. And then when they finally find the nurturer and they choose from their emotional side and they find this amazing human being that loves you and cares for you and seems to understand you even beyond, before you like make sense of what's happening inside of you. But then you're going to need them to be powerful and make choices and decisions and handle their own weight and maybe support you with something. And yeah, that's not what they are. That's not why you chose them. Like, this is why when it comes to what biotype should I choose, I feel like false fires have it the hardest because they have these two very specific like needs to be attracted on one side and to have an actual home in a relationship.
That's the number one biotype that asks me that question.
Yes.
What biotype should I be with? Because I think it's hard for them to find that balance. Like they're confused. Because they're like, they're so drawn to the power, but it gets yep. so combative when they're holding that space.
Do you know what I was thinking too? That I think we should do this episode from a very compassionate place in which we say the perks and the dark side of dating every biotype, but also how to nurture them a little bit. Because mm-hmm. they have a secret way of being nurtured. I mean, we can, like, without giving away too much, like speak a little bit into that as a piece of advice for everybody listening.
Great. That sounds awesome. So let's work our way around the biotype map. Let's start up at
let's
the top.
Go.
North Pole. Let's go cholerics and fire waters.
Mr. Ruswold, what do you think is the benefit of dating a choleric or a fire water?
Oh, they will make every decision. If you are ever stuck in analysis paralysis, they have an opinion on it. They can take the lead. If you are looking for a comfortable space in which like you can be provided for, cared for in that way, absolutely a choleric or a fire water will be happy to take the torch and lead the way through it. Cholerics and firewaters, I feel like if you are not one for confrontation, but you want someone to handle confrontation for you, cholerics and firewaters.
Yep.
If you are someone who, I don't want to say wants to coast, but if you want an advocate,
yes.
an advocate for your best interests, from their perspective, your best interests, cholerics and firewaters. Like if you are in a relationship where you're like, I want to feel protected, I want to feel safe, cholerics and firewaters.
And there's something about that energy that you're describing that's very authentic and caring. When we argue with them, when we fight them, when we make them feel that they're all toxic narcissists that we've talked about in the past, sometimes we forget that their energy does feel different. Like when a fire water or a cleric wants to support you into anything, it authentically feels like they know what they're doing. They really care about supporting you. And their arrogance is almost like, I don't know if this word even exists in English, but embracing. Like it feels like it holds you. It's their way of loving. And when most people do that, when most people stand for you, when most other biotypes stand for you and want to prove to you that they love you, the statement itself of look at me supporting you becomes more important than the supporting. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And this definitely doesn't happen with firewaters and cholerics. It really feels like they're on a mission. It really feels like they care. And it really, sometimes it feels like they care about the outcome and the final result way more than you, like mm-hmm. way more than the person they're supporting. And it's a healthy arrogance. arrogance, to just to remind some of our listeners, and coaching is understood as blindness. When someone is arrogant, only their truth is the right one and the one that matters, and everybody else is wrong. But this type of arrogance that fire, waters, and cholerics can create in relationships and with their friends, it really feels like, join me in this adventure. I know it's about you, but we will make it work. It's like they take it personally. It's like it's now part of their life and who they are. And there's something beautiful about that. But on the dark side, that exact same energy can become what, Mr. Ross?
Controlling, directed towards you. You know, in the same way that they can be protective for you, they might be protective over you. So in certain areas where maybe like you want a little bit more freedom, certain areas where you have opinions, get ready to have the need to stand up for yourself. And biologically, if you are not one of those biotypes, you will be going it will almost feel like an unfair match. You might wind up feeling unheard. You might wind up feeling alone in a situation. You might wind up feeling, I'm trying to think if you might wind up feeling unimportant. Yeah, I think you could wind up feeling unimportant, because if you are not the immediate object of what they're trying to achieve results in, it might feel like their work is way more important than you and your relationships. I think it could definitely feel like the family, like your family, especially if it's not their family. It might feel like they are, oh God, Sunny is giving us incredible words in the chat. You might feel powerless. You might feel unworthy. You might feel alone, unseen.
This is what I believe is extremely confusing about what you're unfolding, which is, if I have a choleric or fire water friend, like don't even think of a romantic relationship, just a friendship, and they really care about me, and they see that I'm struggling with something, and that something might be my company, like I'm struggling with something I'm doing with my company, and my friend is an expert in creating systems for blah, 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 and they show up, and they start performing, and my team kind of starts liking them. If this choleric or fire water really loves me, they're going to take over the company like it's their own. Not because they want it. Not because they want to prove a point. But because they really want to make this happen for you. And most of the times, cholerics and fire waters don't know when to stop. They don't know when to just back off and go like, okay, that's all I was going to give you. And from this point on, I'm just spot coaching. And you can call me anytime and I love you. They really want to see the whole thing through. And then it feels like what they're doing is more important than the relationship with you. Like they fell in love with the company and the employees and making things happen, and they forgot that they were doing it for you. That's how it feels for most people.
I have another one, and I'm trying to figure out how to articulate this, but if you are trying to get emotion out of your partner and you want an emotional understanding of something that is illogical, you are barking up the wrong tree. Like if like this is the quintessential conversation of, I don't want you to fix this. I just want you to hear me and understand what I'm going through. And why aren't you feeling this way too? I think those are the biggest realizations that people in relationships with cholerics and fire waters get to have, because people are you're knocking on a door that rarely opens. I'm not going to say doesn't, but if it's opened, it's because that door has had construction on it to install new hinges. They've oiled those hinges, and it has been practiced and practiced and practiced so that door can open. But it is not something that comes naturally to these biotypes. And people tend to expect it of them and judge them for not having it. So if that's something that you're looking for in a relationship with your partner, and you're like, well, shift into this gear that I very much have, you should have it too. Understand that gear is one that needs to be installed through hard work and understanding on their part, not yours. You can't change them.
Yes, there's one thing I want to say. I want to give a very expensive tool that I don't know if we should give away, but I don't think we're going to do it for every biotype. But this one is going to be important. There is a secret about loving, controlling human beings in general, but especially cholerics and fire waters. And It's a little bit of a manipulation technique, but it works beautifully. And it's something that I teach women that are married to cholerics and men that are married to fire waters. And it's a way to bring them back into their feminine side. Masculine people believe that they're loved because of what they do, what they bring to the table, like their abilities. Masculine men and women, that's what they want other people to see. That's what they want other people to value. If you value something that a fiery person understands, then they're going to overdo it. They're going to dedicate a lot of their time and energy and effort into proving that they still have that ability and that they care about you, and they'll overuse it in many ways. The best way to make a fiery person just calm down and settle in the relationship is by never allowing them to understand why you love them.
Never allowing them to understand helps them calm down.
Let me break it down. That sounded very rough. So like I'm building this concept, but you need to express to them that you love them because of a part of themselves that they can't see, that they don't really understand. A feminine part of themselves. It has to be about worthiness. It has to be about beingness 100%. So they need to know that you love them because of a quality that seems almost mystical about them. Because that's the only way in which they'll believe that you have value in an arena that they cannot control and do not understand, while at the same time never being able to lose or like overuse the quality that you're talking about. So if I tell a fiery person, and by fiery person, remember guys, I'm talking about cholerics and fire waters. If I tell a fiery person, I love you because of your leadership, they're going to overdo their leadership in our lives, in our space. Like if we go out to a restaurant, she's going to take the lead way more because I just told her that that's a part of her that I love the most. But if I tell her I love you because of your compassion, she won't really know what I'm talking about. Like, of course, she'll understand the concept, but she won't know how to overdo that. And that creates two beautiful things. First, it calms them down because they can't overdo compassion. They can't be out with you in the restaurant tomorrow and overdo compassion in the middle of it. Second, they see a value in what you can see in them that they cannot see themselves. So they start respecting your strength that just goes in a different direction. And at the same time, you make them value themselves in a more feminine way and trying to pay attention into their beingness. Like, I love you because of who you are, not of what you do. And it's an amazing trick to have cholerics and fire waters just calm down a little bit and then be interested in what you're telling them, because the meaning of why you love them is in those areas, like understanding what compassion is and understanding certain profound things about relationships, and you want them attracted to that.
There's a nuanced difference between cholerics and fire waters and being in a relationship with false fires.
Yes.
Because initially, it will seem the same.
Yes, for the first couple of dates, yes.
Yeah, but I think like when we talk about like what's the bright side to dating both of them, the bright sides to dating a false fire and dating cholerics and fire waters is fairly similar. Meaning
yes.
You'll get the decision making, you'll get the person who's happy to be in charge, lead the way, has their ideas, is very finite in their ideas. The difference is, and you know what? I would say even there's an added bonus of there is an emotional understanding. They do have a depth. They like, mm-hmm. like if you want to go into that deep emotional gear, false fires have it.
Yep.
And when they feel safe and good in relationships, they can go there because that's their home base.
Yes.
So that's like an added bonus. And with an added bonus also comes an added dark side, which is they're going to have the best of both phlegmatics and cholerics and firewaters. And they're going to have the worst of both phlegmatics and cholerics and firewaters. So it's like,
wow, that's rough.
But that's true. Like, right? Like, did I articulate that well?
You have the best of all the axes, of all the choleric phlegmatic axis, and the worst of it too.
Yeah,
I agree.
So you get with the false fire. We've got those similar benefits that we just went over. Leading the pack, I would say ferociously caring would
yes.
be something that a false fire was. Like if you think about like a mama bear, again, great opinions, really solid opinions. Yes. You know, people that either know what they like. Even Sunny, if they have a hard time pulling the trigger on something, they can know what they like, but they might be dancing with the difference between what they feel like they should like versus what they actually do like, which creates indecision. But anyway, so we've got that. On the dark side of dating the false fire is the emotional irrationality that can emerge. One of our favorite things about phlegmatics is that they don't get angry, they get offended. So everything feels personal to a false fire. And with false fires, when they are hit, when something is going against their way, it's a combination of anger and sadness, which triggers a defense mechanism. So you really, if you are in a relationship with a false fire, you really need to master the ways in which you can calm them down and ground them. Because when they are in that, or you know, and that might even be leaving them alone. It might not even be your place in the relationship to do that. But in a relationship with a false fire, like, you either need to be able to not take things personally yourself, or you need to be able to, I call it like raise your shield. When I'm in conversations with certain people that I think can hurt me, I put up like an energetic shield in front of me to like hopefully just like ground it down into the earth. But
I've like, never thought of that in my life.
I know, but I've done a ton of energy work around this stuff. So I'm like, I've got so many tools around like how to function as a phlegmatic in this world.
That's really cool.
Yeah. But if you can have an exercise in neutrality, if you are looking to master the neutral space in this lifetime, engage in a relationship with a false fire, because nothing will test you about like, if I react to this, they will react more. Or I think we've seen, if you are you know, one of the dominant biotypes, if you are choleric or sanguine, it's easier to go bigger than them, which can kind of allow them to retreat into their space. So you're either going to have to out-combat them in their space, knowing that there is no such thing as a rational, logical conversation when they are in that space.
Yeah.
Or you are going to have to find the way to ground them, or at least ground yourself so that they can go through what it is that they're going through. False fires definitely are the most emotionally volatile of all the biotypes.
1,000,000%.
So,
and there's a specific tool about it too for false fires. False fires create emotional logic. And they will show up if they want to fix something with you, if they want to have a conversation with you, they'll present a logic that they've created, and it sounds accurate and it sounds well thought of. But the problem is that the only thing upholding most of the principles of this logic is emotion. And if you try to engage into a logical argument or conversation with a false fire that created this whole argument because they feel a certain way, you better become really good at dropping the conversation and asking, what are you feeling? And what's the emotion behind this? Because if not, there is no way that you'll ever win one of those battles, because the whole logic that they're giving you is a way in which they justified how they feel. And if you don't get them talking about how they feel fast, there goes a week of your life.
There's another positive to being with a false fire. And we talked about how the choleric firewater has that installed door. Like, you know, like they really have to work on that door. False fires have that gear. When false fires feel safe, they can be that emotional space. They can be nurturing. And that's what I mean. Like, they have the best of that axis and the worst of that axis as well. But they can be incredibly caring. There's a dichotomy. If you are looking for a leader who can also be a home, like an emotional home, false fire. Like, that is absolutely something. Like, they really do own that access with both the dark and the light. But they will be able to be that space for any, like, if you need to have that emotional deepness or that, like, comfort, nurturing side, it exists. It exists within them.
And there is something about false fires that I really respect, which is, most people can't really tap into a certain type of energy unless they're going through something terrible. Like, if you see someone stealing your car, if you see someone hurting someone you love, then they tap into this energy that can like lift a bus if it's needed to get the kid outside. False fighters are the only human beings that I've seen in my life that are able to love tapping into that space. Like they can love violently. I don't know if violently is the right word, but the level of energy and passion that they can put into loving someone at a specific moment can be the level of passion that people only experience when they're losing something, when they're getting their car stolen, like when they're angry. And false fighters are able to love like that and stand before the people they love and say things like, what the hell are you doing? Like, there's no way I'm going to stop loving you. Like they're daring to stand before the drift of the world and love fiercely. And it's something that we only see through anger, and seeing it through love, when they tap into that, it's something that I really admire.
I want to add another thing. If you are looking to be in a relationship with a false fighter, or in a relationship with a false fighter, and they have blessed you with showing you their emotional depth, because that's not something that they give to everybody. But if they have shown you their soft emotional side, be very careful with them. Because while it might not feel that monumental to you, it is to them. It is their most vulnerable emotional space. And it is truly them letting you into like their innermost heart that they've been protecting. Be tender with them. And understand that you are holding the most prized possession that they have in their entire life. Everyone gets their strength. Not everyone gets their softness. That's for all the
Wow, that was deep, Ross.
Yeah. No, I've seen it too many times, you know? Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, you know, like you've got to be tender with them. Be gentle with them when they're in that space. Because if you aren't as soft as they can be, you will receive the wrath. And not just you will receive the wrath. Other people that remind them of you will receive that wrath. Like you have a big responsibility, not just to your partner, but really to everyone that your partner interacts with thereafter you, if you are in that space. Okay, let's move on to sanguines a little bit. Let's get sanguineous.
Sanguines are just amazing. Date them. They're great.
Next.
Sanguines are hard, man. Sanguines are hard.
Yeah.
Like, we do have huge benefits that you would never find anywhere else. But I can also see how hard it is to try and be in a relationship with one. And lately, what I've noticed a lot is I've been traveling around. I'm in Spain right now. And there's a lot of sanguine women here. And lately, I've been realizing that we're not really used to feminine sanguine energy. Like in the States and Mexico, it's so hard to find that we're not used to it. And seeing a sanguine woman in particular is seeing someone that seems to be about to explode exactly like a false fire. That seems like they're about to get offended and about to burst into tears or about to get really mad at you in the middle of a situation. And then you just see them brush it off, laugh, and keep going like nothing happened. But with the same amount of energy and intensity of a false fire. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to observe. And the ones that, especially women, I see this in men too, but especially women, when they fall in love with their sanguineness and they become air, and then they're just here and there and everywhere and creating their dreams and being passionate about things, they really enjoy it. But when they want to settle down, in women, it's more obvious than in men. In men, we still fall in love with the mask of joy and charisma. But in women, we can see it more that they don't seem to have the elements that society is looking for them to settle down. Does that make sense?
Totally. I have a friend who's a sanguine, and she travels all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
She's a dancer and a choreographer. And like I was thinking the other day, because I was explaining to her that she's sanguine, it was just like rocking her world. And she's like, yes, holy shit, like you see me. And I said, I just had this thought. I'm like, if you want to settle down, you can't. Like, you have to change. Otherwise, you're just going to have this little puppy dog following you around. Like, but how does that work? And that'll make you feel cramped or controlled or something like that. And I'm just like, it feels like settling down is almost incompatible with who they are when they're true sanguine, you know, when they're sanguine promoters. Let's dive into the the benefits, the shiny superpowers of being in relationship with sanguines. The first word that comes to mind for me is resilience. Mm-hmm. Like if you want a partner who's, if the boat gets rocked, first of all, it takes quite a bit to rock the boat, but that boat stabilizes pretty quickly. Like yep. You don't have to be fragile with sanguines. You don't have to be gentle with sanguines. Compared to some of the other biotypes that are, you know, a little bit more trigger happy or, well, what did you mean by that? Like sanguines are a gaseous ball of energy, that mm-hmm. have a resilience about them. The bounce back, the TTB, the time to bounce back on a sanguine is the shortest. So yeah, if you view yourself as dangerous, if that's one of your beliefs, and you find yourself in a relationship with a sanguine, that belief will be nullified. It is it is incredible. Like how, like the things that used to get rises out of previous partners won't get the rise out of sanguines. And it's a really wonderful space to be in a relationship with a sanguine if you believe that you are dangerous or too much, because you will not be too much for a sanguine, which is incredible.
You won't be too much, and sanguines are here and there, and they know everyone and no one. And I feel like one of the coolest things about being with sanguines is that sanguines are not very attached to anything. So they're willing to say yes to almost everything. Do you want to move here? Yes.
They're so go with the flow. So if you're like, I want to be the decision maker, but I don't necessarily want to be like the power partner, like the one, because sanguines have an incredible amount of power and energy. But they're like, make decisions. You can be the structure. So if you're like, I want to be the structure, sanguines will fill the space of the structure that you provide for them.
Happily.
And they're incredibly, you know, flexible and amiable. And like, I keep wanting to say, like, go with the flow. They are so present. They make such good contact. When you are with them, you will feel so special. You can feel like truly, you could feel like a king or a queen, because they will look at you and be like, wow, you're amazing. And it comes from an authentic space. So that's, I'm trying to think, there's so many other things about being really, their energy. Like they don't tire out very easily. They can handle a lot. They can go out late, wake up early. They are incredible in the space of operating.
As long as we're excited, we're going to keep pushing no matter what.
Absolutely. Highlights of sanguines.
Like a sanguine that's not a controlling sanguine doesn't tend to be that stubborn, which is like, we can change our mind easily. We're not fixed or attached to many, many things. We're willing to try new stuff. You won't have a dull moment if you're in a relationship with a sanguine.
You won't, but you will not.
But there are some drawbacks.
Oh, absolutely. Some. Drawbacks of being in a relationship with a sanguine. They can overextend themselves without realizing that they're overextending themselves. I'm going to put this in the category of self-care. I think they probably have the worst self-care out of all the biotypes. The awareness of self, the awareness of even how they're doing, like if something's going wrong in them, like they won't be the one to tell you until it is way past the time for them to have taken care of this. So there's almost a need to be, well, this isn't necessarily true, but there is a need to be on top of them for their own sake. If you're in partnership.
Yeah, if you love a sanguine, you kind of need to.
Yeah.
And especially on the things that are not attractive to them, like in my case, eating well. Like in my case, not saying yes to everything. It's true. And if you're not on top of your sanguine human being like that, your sanguine is going to stretch themselves thin. That's very true. But coming to the nurturing of sanguines a little bit, don't treat them like they're doing things wrong. Don't treat them like they're horrible human beings. And remember this, like this is a good one for everyone who's in a relationship with a sanguine. Because sanguines feed off of the energy of others and create their identity given the experience that they're creating in others, it's very easy for other biotypes to feel like they're doing it to you. So if I'm in a relationship with someone and as a sanguine, I need attention from another space, I'm not choosing someone on top of you. I'm not choosing out of you. but I don't know if that makes sense.
Kind of.
This is what I was going to say, that is probably the darkest part of sanguines, that sanguines need new audiences. Sanguines need like a new batch of people that bring a new type of experience. And it's something that my wife has dealt with in a relationship with me, which is sometimes we go to a dinner party and I start sharing something that I haven't shared with her. And she goes like, you didn't tell me that. And I just go like, oh, because at a certain point, the sanguines are going crazy in the chat, but at a certain point, it's just not exciting to get feedback from the same person all the time. And if a sanguine just needs to go get attention from someone else, which we do every once in a while, it's not personal. They're not doing it to you. It doesn't mean that they don't love you. They probably love you so much that they're taking care of this attention-seeking need somewhere else so they can come back and be in the relationship.
I will say, if you want to be the center of attention, don't date a sanguine.
Oh, no. No, no.
If you need to be the center of someone's world, if you want to be, if you want to feel like a priority, these are things that you will have to accept, that you will not be always be a priority. You will not always be the center of their world. And sometimes it will feel like you've lost them. And yeah, I will say like
it's over.
That, you know, if you love someone, set them free. I feel like that, like, is built to describe relationships with sanguines. Not that you're letting them go and you're turning your back, but there's almost like a, you need to trust that they will return.
And if they don't, you never really had them.
That's the up and down of the sanguine. Let's go into
There's way worse parts about sanguines, just to be absolutely clear. Sanguines and their bodies and their metabolism moves really, really fast. So you better not have a problem with someone that burps, farts, et cetera, because if you're with a sanguine, man or woman, you're going to get a lot of that.
I like that you needed to circle back to make sure that we squeezed that in. Everyone burps and farts. Everyone burps and farts.
Not as much as sanguines, baby.
If you're in a relationship and you have a hard time with somebody burping and farting, we get to have a conversation about intimacy and unconditional love. But if you're looking to date someone that looks polished and perfect.
Never go for the sanguine. No. Never. Never.
Go with a false fire. Okay. Let's.
Gas is everywhere.
Phlegmatics.
Yes.
Upside of date, and we're not talking about false fires now. We're going to talk about true phlegmatics, those that
yes.
haven't rejected it. So if you are looking for a therapist, if you are looking for, like, if you're like, I want a partner that has a sixth sense, that can feel things that are happening before I even realize it's going on. I want someone that deeply understands people, that is the glue within community, that cares and takes action deeply and is so in service to the vision of that can be in true service to my vision, that yeah. can be in true service to my goals, my life, what I am up to. I can safely say that there is no better pairing than a phlegmatic. The phlegmatic is I want to say like the human personification of the third eye. It is just open and perceives and feels and emotes. You will never feel more supported, cared for, and seen than you will with a phlegmatic. If you are going through a hard time, they will be right down there in the mud with you. Like, they will cry for you. Mm. If there was a way to take away all of your pain, even if it meant internalizing it for themselves so that you could feel fine, they would do that.
Yeah, that's the beautiful side of phlegmatics if we're talking about the best phlegmatic in the world.
Yes. Yeah, we're talking about the higher self of the phlegmatic.
There you go. Phlegmatics seem to live and thrive in a dimension within with the world that most of us can't see. What you described is exactly that dimension. If you want someone that has meaning for things that we can't really address or understand and feels absolutely comfortable talking about subjective things, abstract things, emotional things, and guide you through that world, even as a therapist, as we were saying before. Yes, Aflomatic is the best translator of the inner world for any other biotype, 100%. That's why everybody's on certified therapist, because they are the translators of the internal world for everyone else.
Well said. The dark side of Aflomatic is get ready for illogical emotional experiences. Get ready for someone that may not be pursuing their dreams, may not have the ambition or belief in their external abilities. Maybe they give too much away for free. You know, maybe they don't, you know, like they get so much in the exchange of just in the giving, they might not feel comfortable charging for something. So if you are in a relationship with a phlegmatic, you might often find them not necessarily being the best financial providers. That might be something that they've grown into, right? That could definitely be something that they've grown into. But from the base of it, in the truest sense, they get so much from the exchange and the appreciation of what they can give to people. It almost feels unfair to charge on top of that sometimes.
Yeah.
Confrontation to phlegmatics feels so much bigger than it does to any other biotype.
It feels like punching them.
If they are in confrontation, they have the slowest refractory period. You know, if we talked about sanguines being the quickest to bounce back, phlegmatics take the slowest amount of time.
Not only do they take the slowest amount of time, like there's something very important about the dark side of phlegmatics too, which is that inner world that we're talking about. It's gooey, it's sticky, it has a lot of meaning, and it moves very slow. So that time that you're talking about, their time to bounce back, it will be way longer than anyone else, 100%. They will be offended. And many times, not what you talked about is what's going to be present. Well, I've experienced this with like phlegmatic friends all of my life growing up in Mexico. You might have a conversation with them, but because they're going to move slow into that conversation and the agreements that you made and blah, 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 and they'll remember more of the emotion than what was said, they will come back with a completely different emotional meaning from what you talked about.
So if you need logic, a phlegmatic can understand logic, but it won't solve any problem.
Yeah. Can understand logic, but they still see it as a foreign thing beyond emotion.
Yeah, there's another component. There's another layer. I like that live in another realm. So it's like sometimes the problem doesn't exist in the realm that you're looking at. So I would say in a relationship with a phlegmatic, the key thing is patience. Patience, patience, patience.
And also a little bit of encouraging them to go into action. Because phlegmatics that are moving are amazing. Like phlegmatics that get it about moving and making things happen, they're amazing. Like we always say that the best CEO of a company would be a balanced phlegmatic. Mm-hmm. Like I totally agree with that. The big problem, again, is a lot of phlegmatics, instead of taking action for the things that they care about, like I love that, for example, you care about the environment and you have the leader of Compost LA coming to the show and everything, the podcast. I love that.
Yeah.
But I hate it when phlegmatics, and there's a lot of phlegmatics like this in the world lately, think that they can solve the external world by solving the internal world. How are you fixing the environment? I am like meditating and fixing my childhood and my chakras.
So funny, because I know you say that and I absolutely believe that that's a part of it.
It is a part of it, but it is not 100% of it.
No.
Like we wish other biotypes did a little bit more of that.
Yeah,
but that's not the only way out.
It's the easiest way to solve something without conflict.
Very true.
Out there, no. In here, I'll stay in here.
And we know they hate conflict.
Yes, they do. Do we talk about best ways to be with a phlegmatic, like the gifts that you can give them with compassion?
I feel like what you gave them at the beginning was perfect, which is this part of if they like the same thing that applies to false fires. If a phlegmatics give more than they receive, always. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if they're a false fire or not. And if a phlegmatic allows you to care for them, fucking care for them. Like if a phlegmatic opens up about their heart, no matter if they're a false fire or not, like be there for them, because it's not easy for them to ask for it. And by the time they finally ask, they usually do it in such an emotional way that no one really gives it to them.
I will absolutely say that. Like, if they are asking for it, they are well beyond the point where they've needed the support.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they do it in such an emotional way that people feel guilty about it and just push them away. And that's when they need us the most.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they go into loneliness. Yep. So, okay. There's your phlegmatics.
This is becoming a little bit therapeutical for both of us, Ross.
Yeah. I would say, like, if you're in a relationship with phlegmatic, really avoid judgment of their emotional state, because and it might even feel crazy to them too. Like, I think for a lot of phlegmatics, they don't want to be there either. So it doesn't make logical sense to them either. And I always like to say this for phlegmatics, your emotions don't make logical sense. Stop trying to give it meaning. Stop trying to figure out where the emotion's coming from, because you're just going to go into a downward spiral. No, that's not it. The only way out is through. Just feel it. Like, almost like I like to call it running the faucet, like in an old house. You turn on the faucet, let the brown water out, and don't be like, like, which pipe is this coming from? Or how could I just run the
just
fucking water?
Just purge it.
Yeah. Okay, melancholics. Upside of being in relationships with melancholics.
There's a lot that's very positive about dating melancholics. I did for a long, long time. Okay, first, if you're from a dominant biotype, they're fascinating. Like, if you're a sanguine, a fire water, or a choleric, melancholics at the beginning are fascinating because they're very well put together. At least they seem like it. Everything is in the right place. They seem, for us, like, too good to be true.
For us, you mean sanguines?
For, like, sanguines and cholerics. Like, I see this a lot. And I guess fire waters feel the same thing about melancholic men. Like, at the beginning, they look like, I cannot believe that someone like this exists, because they're quiet and polite, and they avoid the confrontation too, and they want everything to be fair and just and like specific. And at the very beginning, and probably for a few months, even maybe for the first couple of years, you won't be able to see the darkness in them. You won't be able to see where they're broken. You won't be able to see where they're like tripping with the same stone. And that first period is fascinating because it really feels like you're dating the perfect human being.
Melancholics have that deep inner world intellectually. So, like, they're this vast array of knowledge, but they're not necessarily showy about it. It's not something they're out wearing it on their sleeve. They've got, if you're looking to date an individual, like, if you're like, I want to be in a relationship with somebody who can just, like, kind of do their own thing and they don't need a lot for me, melancholics. Like, melancholics are incredible individuals in terms of their ability to operate internally. They have incredible self-regulation when it comes to their, emotions.
They
you know, similar to sanguines, it's like their boat doesn't get rocked very easily, and they could very much look at things objectively. I know we're about to get into the downward mental spiral.
Yes.
But I want to save that kind of for the dark side of things, because the downward mental spiral doesn't happen. It's not affected by a thing that I said. That's something that happens over time. When we talk about maintenance of your partner, we'll get into melancholic, because there is the melancholic maintenance to check in with. But in terms of stability, logic, connecting puzzle pieces, seeing patterns, a melancholic will be like an observational force that needs none of the credit. There's very rarely hubris associated with melancholic. So if you're looking for like the humble genius or the humble artist, or if you're looking for humility in a partner, I think melancholics absolutely naturally bring a sense of humility to the table.
That is so very true. They pay really close attention. Like, a melancholic will always figure you out before they start showing you who they are. And as they're figuring you out, they become like knowledgeable about the things that you care about, and they focus on the things that you really value, and they're very present with the things that you pay attention to. So that's beautiful at the very beginning, because people feel once a melancholic chose you, people feel authentically seen. Because I feel like I've only felt this with melancholics and a few phlegmatics, but especially melancholics. Melancholics have an intellectual barrier that stops them from loving you, no matter how attracted they are to you. even if you have perfect traumatic compatibility with them and they think that you're the most fascinating human being in the world, they can intellectually stop themselves from being with you. And when a melancholy goes like, okay, I'm in, they're fucking in. And they're fucking in a way that can be very scary for a lot of people out there. And this is part of their negative side. That when melancholic says, okay, this is who I am, and if you're choosing me, here comes my darkness. Everything they didn't allow you to see in this little trickle down of authenticity within their relationship is usually presented to you in one sitting. And that's fucking scary. Yes.
It's like opening the covenant of the ark and the face melting off. Just like, fine, you want to see what's in my head? Wah.
Well, they seemed perfect for the longest time. So it's imagine this. Imagine dating a sanguine that seems perfect about everything. And every little thing that you've noticed about when you're dating a sanguine, you go out with them, you have a like meal with them, and suddenly something pops out of their mouth and you go like, wait, what? Were you in jail? Like, the sanguine will just say it. Like, in the middle of nowhere, they'll go like, well, yeah, that one time in prison, my friend from prison, you know? And a melancholic won't tell you anything. A melancholic will sound like, huh, this mysterious person, why do they know so much? And they're so fascinating and blah, blah, blah. And then you finally sit down with them. They finally choose you. The wall is down and they go like, yeah, I've been in prison. My brother killed someone. My sister, blah, blah, blah. My dad was like an international thief. My mom, and everybody goes like, holy fuck. Like, I should have known this in small dosages in the last 2 years. Not everything in one sitting tonight.
If you find mysteriousness sexy, you probably like melancholic.
Which is why sanguines fall for melancholics.
Yep. Other elements of melancholics to be aware of is we could talk about the downward mental spiral.
Yes, that's exactly it. Like, do not support them in a downward mental spiral where they are getting, like, convincing themselves that something is fundamentally wrong about who they are. Like, block it immediately and take it into another direction immediately. One of the best things you can do in a relationship, and this is like a big clue about melancholics, is one of the best things that you can do with a melancholic is find a way for them to outsource their confidence to you.
What does that look like?
If you've created a deep relationship with a melancholic that actually trusts you and trusts your judgment to a point where they can go like, if you say yes, I feel safe. Like, if you say I can do it, I trust you. That's one of the most fantastic feelings in the world. And it's a way in which, as a dominant biotype, you can really care for them. And you can see them letting go for a minute and just allowing something. It can be a ride, like in Disneyland. It can be the stupidest little thing. But they can go like, if you think that I can do this, I trust you. It's a big responsibility, because if you fail them once, that's done. Like, if you tell them that they're able to do something and you weren't sure, like, that trust is done. But if you have that trust and you're able to love them in that way, you'll see them thrive in beautiful ways. Just be very careful when you say, yeah, I'm sure you can do this.
Yeah. Melancholics hide or avoid rather with fear. So if you're comfortable being the safe space of there's nothing to fear here, decision, like the safe space of certainty, let's call it.
Yeah. That's a good name.
Yeah. Trademark. Safe space of certainty. So we've gone through all of the biotypes.
Yes.
Now we're going to finally help. We have an exercise here to answer the question of what biotype should I be with? And now we're also about to get into personalities. So what we just gave you was the biological structure, but we're going to incorporate within this exercise, personalities are going to come into play. Because what we gave you was the baseline. What we gave you was the biology of each of these biotypes. Now there is a spectrum within every single biotype because personality exists. Personality is dynamic, personality changes. So even if you're a melancholic, you're like, well, I don't have that thing. It's like, yeah, but your personality is in play as well.
And one more thing, like when we're talking about all those negative drawbacks of every biotype, I don't care if you're 20 and you're thinking, oh, my personality doesn't work like that. Wait for you to turn 35 or 40 and you'll start realizing that your personality is not that strong and you'll rely on your physicality and you'll become more like your biotype than ever before.
If you want to learn how to figure out someone's personality, you can go to biotypes.teachable.com and you will be able, or even if you go to rgpdevelopment.com, you can get an easier way to go in there. But yeah. we do have the course that teaches you how to identify personality and biotypes. And there are some really great exercises in there that will help you narrow it down. And we've been seeing some incredible results from people that have taken the online course and being able to figure out their own biotype accurately, as well as their own personality. So that will help you run the gamut, figure out where you fit in this, and even the people that you've been talking to on dating apps or whatever it is. Yeah. Like, this is a must take for people on dating apps. It will change the way you swipe. I'm like so sure of it.
Oh my God, Roz, I never thought of that. How are people swiping without knowing biotypes?
Traumatic compatibility and egoic attraction.
Wow.
Yeah, it's how you go from swiping for the red flags to the green flags.
No.
It's the game changer. Wow. Let's dive into this exercise. We're about to go into an exercise. If you want to join in on this included exercise, go to our Patreon and you can hear the full version of this episode. Patreon.com/RGP development. We are going to walk you through an exercise to identify what biotype and personality you, quote unquote, should be with based on your own criteria.
Ooh.
We'll see you over there.
Want more Biotypical? Well, good news, there's a longer version of this episode available at patreon.com/RGPdevelopment. There, you'll also be able to find ways to get on the podcast yourself, ask questions, as well as watch a live taping remotely. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast and subscribing. Remember to rate this 5 stars wherever you're listening to it, and we'll see you next time.